Welcome to the Heart Matters Podcast with your host, Ibn Leon. Join us as we explore the intricacies of spirituality and self-improvement. Gain a fresh perspective on enhancing your spiritual, emotional, and mental well-being through the fusion of spirituality and self-improvement. Enjoy Ibn's engaging conversations with guests from diverse backgrounds. They share unique perspectives on personal growth and holistic health. From spiritual leaders to relationship experts, entrepreneurs to creatives, each episode delivers knowledge and inspiration. Tune into the Heart Matters Podcast for profound conversations and practical advice, empowering you to live your best life. Chapter 5, Inspiring Stories. Hey everybody, this is the Heart Matters Podcast, and I am your host, Lewis Marsh, relationship and spiritual life coach. It is my mission and mantra to help the women and couples deepen their connection, communication, and intimacy with one another and or the creator of the heavens and the earth. We have Crystal Center Brown on today. She has worked in the nonprofit industry for more than 18 years, including 15 years with the American Cancer Society and 3 years with the Urban League. She has an MS from Baypath University in nonprofit management and philanthropy. We're going to have to talk about that.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, we're going to have to chat about that a little bit. She has received several community awards, including a fellowship in poetry from the Massachusetts Cultural Council, the Baypath College Pathfinder Award, and the Harold Grinspoon Spirit Award for her children's book, Gabby Saturday. She is also the founder of the Ella Louise Backpack Project, which has provided backpacks and school supplies to homeless children in the Springfield, Massachusetts area since 2007. And she is an accomplished author, which is one of the reasons I wanted to have her on the program. She has written 6 books. The first one is called Gabby Gives Back, which she wrote in 2016, and also But Now I See, But You Have Such a Pretty Face, Double Dutch, Gabby Saturday, and The Rhythm in Blue. Welcome, Crystal Center Brown, to the Heart Matters, everyone. How are you, Crystal?
I'm awesome. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you for agreeing to be on the program. I really appreciate that. Now, let's talk about this MS in nonprofit and philanthropy, because I was wondering about that when I read the bio. I said, what does that mean? Can you explain this to me?
It's basically that I'm really good at getting people to give me their money for a cause. So my degree is in that. So if there's a cause that so right now I'm raising money for Girls Inc. And I'm raising money for where I work, my university. And so I'm really good at identifying people who I think will give not only a small gift now, but maybe a bigger gift later. So it's really a skill in assessing people and seeing kind of what their giving capability would be.
Okay, so why did you decide to go into the nonprofit industry to begin with?
I was working for the Cancer Society. I had been working there after I had a nephew, almost like my nephew, that was diagnosed with cancer when he was maybe 3. And my aunt was actually diagnosed too. And so they helped me quite a bit. And so I wanted to just give back. And at first I was a volunteer. And then there was a job opening and I loved it so much. I loved being able to make a difference. And I stayed in that role 15 years until they had a reorganization, and then now I'm at Baypath. So I probably would have stayed longer if they hadn't had the reorg, because I loved it. I really did.
Wow. Okay. Well, wait a minute. Your nephew found out he had cancer at 3 years old?
Yeah, he actually was 1 now that I think about it. Yes, it was my cousin's son. He's like 23 now. He's great. But when he was baby, he had leukemia. And his grandmother was also diagnosed within about a year of a different type of leukemia. So we had cancer in our family very early, and I wanted to be able to give back. But then I ended up working for them 15 years, which was great.
Wow. Okay, so let's talk about the writing a little bit, because this is how you first got on my radar. You know, I saw that you have all, and you write poetry. So when I wrote you the email, you remember when I wrote you the message? I said, well, maybe you can come on and you can read some of your poems.
Oh, sure. Cool. Yeah.
You can read some of your poem. Sure. So when did you start the writing? Did you start the writing as a kid?
I did. I started performing as a kid. So when I was six, my mom worked at a local college. Well, actually, it's closed now, but it was a Black college called Morristown College in Morristown, Tennessee, which is where I'm from. She worked there. And so we did this Wednesday nights. So we'd go to this church basement and we would learn poetry. And I memorized Langston Hughes poems, Maya Angelou. And so so as I got older, I was known as the child that could memorize poetry. But I never wrote my own poetry until I was probably maybe my teens. But I didn't start sharing my poetry until I was in my 20s. So it was a process, right? It's performing other people's poetry as a child, then writing my own poetry as a teenager, and then performing my own poetry as an adult.
Okay. So when you started performing, you started doing spoken word, right?
Yes.
When you were in your 20s. All right.
Yep.
So how did you start? There was an open mic one night and you just went and you, how did this happen?
We actually started an open mic. There were no open mics in the area at that time. I'm sure there probably were some back in the day here in the Springfield area, but when poetry was really starting to pick up again, when Love Jones movie came out was when it really started. I got popular around here.
Yeah.
And so there were no spaces. And so we actually opened a space, not open, we borrowed a space and we opened an open mic and I started performing. And it was just a small group of people that also were writers. So there was no pressure. You know, now it's nightclubs and it's a very big showy kind of thing. And I feel like back then it was very pure and you could just share your poetry and, you know, you hear other people's poetry, have some coffee and go home. So it's very easy.
It's amazing how a movie could impact such an art form like that, because I remember that, you know what I'm saying? That movie was phenomenal, you know, in impacting the spoken word movement, especially among Black people, you know.
Right.
It was amazing. So when let's talk about that. When you saw that movie, you know, so how did it impact you when you first saw Love Jones?
First of all, I love, what is this, the Lorenz Tate?
Yeah.
Still, he looks the same.
He does, doesn't he? He does.
So Lorenz Tate, if you're hearing this, I've been married 20 years, but Lorenz Tate is one of my passes. I have a few passes, so he's one of my passes. But so back then, for me, because I performed it when I was little and I wrote as a teenager, it was exciting to see it brought in that way. And to see people interested in it at a nightclub, right? You're a nightclub, you're drinking, you're dancing. Who would want to sit and listen to poetry? But the way that they made it, because it was, you know, some of it was very sensual and very, it made it interesting. And so I thought it was really cool. And I thought that we could do the same thing here in Springfield. And we did.
Wow. Excellent. All right. So when did you first win your first award for writing?
Oh, that's a great question. You know, they always had those, and they still have them, those like anthologies where you could like, you send your poetry in, then you have to buy the anthology. So that was the first time I was like 14. But awards, actually, I've never won an actual award for poetry, but I have for my screenwriting. So the movie that I wrote, that won probably 14 or 15 different awards, different festivals, but not my poetry yet.
Okay, so what's the name of the movie that you wrote?
It's called The Rhythm in Blue. So it's after my novel. So my first novel that came out in 2012 was optioned in 2013. And it should be, right now it's in the process of being put on Amazon, but there's some issues with it. So they're trying to get it fixed, but hopefully soon it'll be on Amazon.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Wow. Were you on set?
Oh yeah, we were there for 2 weeks in South Carolina.
Is that?
It was so cool. It was the coolest experience. Wow. Yeah.
Well,
yeah,
okay,
really
so
cool.
All right, well, wait a minute. Take me inside of this. You know what I'm saying? Your book is being made into a movie and you're on this. What were you advising? What were you doing there? Just observing?
So on set, I was observing, but beforehand, I was there for casting. So we casted in New York City. We had a casting call. I met with the director. We kind of drew out what we wanted the characters to be, what their names were going to be, same as the book, what I kind of wanted them to look like, but it really wasn't important. But then when people started auditioning, we had people show up that looked exactly like they did when I wrote them. So Jasmine, who's one of my main characters, the girl who plays Jasmine looks just like Jasmine looked when I wrote her. And so it was easy to cast because a lot of these cast members came in looking just like when I wrote them. And so I think, yeah, it was exciting, but I think it was a long process too. So even after we shot for 2 weeks in South Carolina, they still shot additional, you know, footage in DC, Rhode Island. So they did all that, right? I only did it 2 weeks, but my role was writing the script. just taking the novel and making it into a screenplay.
Wow. Okay. We got to talk about that. Okay. So who did you have any input into who the director was going to be, or did they already pick that? How does that work when you get your work put into a film? Do you have input into that process at all?
Most of the time, no. And actually, the woman who contacted me was the director, so I got to meet her beforehand, right? So I was comfortable with her. But you don't have a say usually. Usually, if you're a writer and you option your book for a film, which means someone's going to pay you to make your book into a movie, a lot of times you're just kind of handing it off to them, and they can do whatever they want with it. So there were characters that were cut from the main. There were actually scenes that were cut, like storylines that were cut. But that's what happens.
Okay, so you don't. All right, take me through the process. Let me and my audience understand what the process is. They see the book. They want to make the book into a movie. They contact you.
Right.
And you say what?
So she contacted me. I remember it was in the summer of 2013. And I thought it was a joke. I was like, this is a joke. I'm in Springfield, Massachusetts, right? So you wouldn't think that there would be any Hollywood or New York stuff happening in this area at that level, but there is. And so she contacted me. She actually drove here from New York City, and we met at a restaurant here. And when she met with me, she already had a binder with locations scouted. She had read my book start to finish. She knew all the characters. She knew everything she wanted to do. So I trusted her fully, and I still trust her. She's really smart, and she knew exactly what she wanted to do. So she had a scout in South Carolina that scouted all the locations for us. So we actually shot right there. And so it was a big process, right? So my role, like I said, was just the screenplay. All I had to do was that. Everything else, they did.
Okay, well, so when you're asked to write the screenplay, mm-hmm. they're already telling you what scenes they're not going to use.
No.
They don't tell you that?
Nope. You write it. You take that book. And so I'm a creative writer, right? I can write a story. I can write a story right now in 10 minutes. But a screenplay is different because it's technical. So you think about when you're looking at, a scene from a movie, that person's writing, that he's standing there, he's upset. There's a picture on the wall. It's just that. And so when she said, I'm going to pay someone to write the screenplay, I'm like, I can write the screenplay. I could totally write the screenplay. So I went on Google that night and Googled, how do you write a screenplay? And that's how I wrote it.
Yeah.
And so she had to end up hiring a tech writer to come in and fix some of the technical stuff, because I don't know anything about camera work or any of that, right? But that's normal.
Right. Yeah. I wrote a screenplay, and mm-hmm. it really you got to put everything in the scene.
You do. Know what I mean? Yeah.
What the person is wearing. Mm-hmm. Where
that's not fun
standing.
To me.
It is like.
That's not fun to me. It's not fun to me. It's
you
not.
Didn't enjoy
just,
it?
I'm
you
not
didn't
a enjoy details. It? No, I'm just not.
Wow.
Now, okay, I'll write the story though, but no, not the details.
Okay, so why did you agree to write it?
That's a good question. I think I want to control. I'm a control freak, so I want to control over it. And I thought me writing it would mean it would stay the same, but no. So they got my version. They actually hired a man to come in and write some of the dialogue for them. Because I write a lot of male characters, but two of my male characters, they wanted more dialogue, more kind of authentic male dialogue. And so he did that, which was great. But aside from that, I wrote everything else.
Wow. So when you gave them the screenplay,
mm-hmm.
credit, right? So yep. did they come back to you and say, look, Miss Cynthia Brown, we're going to cut this scene out. Or did they just do that?
No, they told me. They told me because the dialogue. So I purposely, so think about this. Like if you write a story, I wrote the story in 2013. I wrote the screenplay. No, I wrote the story actually in 2009. I didn't publish it 2013. So the story was not really clear in my head. Honestly, after I published it, I didn't really think about it anymore. So I had to reread the book to write the screenplay. So there were some dialogue I left out of the screenplay that the director was like, what is happening? Like, I like the book because of the dialogue. Where is the dialogue? And I had to go back and rewrite and add the dialogue in. And so it's a lot of little pieces. So if you're not a detail, I'm not a detailed person. So if you're not a detailed person, let them have somebody else do the screenplay. You write the story and let someone else do the screenplay.
Okay, so tell us what the book is about.
So there's two storylines, two main storylines. One of them is a guy named Mason, who is a lawyer and he lives in DC, successful. He's getting ready to get married. But his fiance is a little bit of a bridezilla. And so he decides to take a break for a few days and go to Virginia to a friend's house. And while he's there at Jasmine's house, something happens to his fiance. And so it changes, it turns his whole life upside down, and he starts to blame himself for this happening because he left to spend time with Jasmine. And the other storyline is a pastor who has a young boy show up at his doorstep that says that he's his son. So he has to figure out, how is this my son? Like, when did it happen? And he's married, you know, he's got married, he has a whole other family. So it's, there's two different storylines that kind of run parallel to each other.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right, well, why did you name it The Rhythm in Blue?
Well, so the town is Blue, Virginia. So that's what it's based in, a town called Blue, Virginia. In my head, it's like near maybe Norfolk, Hampton Roads area. And so the rhythm means like the people in blue. So all of my stories are set in that town. Like every story I've ever written has been set in that town. So The Rhythm in Blue. So these are just four of those characters, four of those people that are kind of the pulse of that city.
Okay, well, why are your stories written in Virginia?
That's a good question, because I'm from Tennessee. So I don't know. I went to high school in Virginia for a very short period of time. I have no idea. It's a good question. I love the South, though. I do. And so all my stories will have some sort of Southern element in it. But that's I wanted it to be a fictional town, kind of like Stephen King does. He has his town. So I like to have my own town. Blue Virginia is my town.
Right.
So, yeah.
So it's not an actual town.
Mm-mm. I think there's a Blue Ridge, because I had looked for it one time on a map. I think there's a Blue Ridge, but not blue. Yeah.
Wow. All right, we're going to get back to this writing thing, because, you know, I write a little bit, you know, not like that, but
I'm sure you do.
All right, so let me ask you about, because I read in your bio that you're a justice of the peace.
Yes.
Okay, so when did you do this?
When did you so become I became a
justice of the peace?
Well, so my husband, we've been married 20 years, and we got married in 2000, and when we were getting ready to get married, my husband's Jehovah's Witness, and I'm Baptist. So finding a pastor to marry us was almost like impossible, because that religion, they definitely would not come where we were. And then our pastors, really, there were certain places they wouldn't go. And then I had family members that wouldn't come into the building if there was alcohol being served anywhere in the building. So it was like, you know, so I'm like, you know what, when I get married, after this is all said and done, I want to be able to provide a service to people who just want to get married without all the, you know, the whole, like, you know, reception and the money. And I was like, just get married. You love each other, get married. Without all the nonsense. And so I've been one for 19 years. Yeah, not much now though, because of COVID. Like, I'm a little scared. I have a wedding December 5th and I haven't done, I usually do about maybe 40 weddings a year. But this year I've done maybe five because of COVID. I'm scared.
Okay, so how did you become a justice of the peace?
Right, so Massachusetts, I found out. So I was featured in Essence magazine probably 5 years ago for being a JP. And after that, I probably had about 1,000 emails a day from women wanting to know the same question. So I was thinking it was the same every state, right? I'm like, oh, this is easy. It's a side hustle. Anyone can do this. No. Mass, it's easy because you don't have to be appointed. You can actually just, you don't have to be elected. You can be appointed. So you just apply and you have to get 5 signatures and that's it. And as long as there's an opening in your town. So I think they only have a certain number per population, you know, per city based on the population. So where I live, there was one opening. At the time I was 25 and I was the youngest person in the state. And I think that's why they gave it to me, honestly, because I'm a woman and I was young. Because now you have to wait. Now there's a waiting list because people don't give it up. Once you're a JP, you don't give it up. You know, you keep it. Notary too, right? So there's no spots till someone dies or they move.
Are you serious?
Yeah, I love it though. It's a really good, and I love people too. So it's like perfect for me.
Wow. Okay, so because of COVID, you haven't been able to do
that many. I did one a month ago, and I talked to the couple beforehand and I said, you know, I'm fine doing it, but you have to keep your mask on the entire time until it's time for your kiss. They were fine with it. The wedding starts and both masks come off and go into pockets. So we have, you know, probably 20 people there for the wedding. And I didn't know what to do. Like, what do? You stop the whole ceremony? So luckily I had on one of the like really nice masks that I felt comfortable being. If I didn't have that on, I would have to stop the whole ceremony. So I said, I don't want that to happen again. So I have one more this year and that'll be it until COVID's done.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, so what have you, what has your life been like since COVID-19? I asked most of my guests this question. Mm-hmm. Since COVID-19 hit, what has your life been like?
At the beginning, it was really rough. You know, I lost colleagues where I work. My mother actually got COVID. So it was a lot of illness and a lot of really significant, like probably March, April, I would say all of May, and maybe the first couple weeks of June was really rough for me because I was home. I was working from home and my husband works during the day. And so, but I actually joined a Bible study probably the second week of May, and that helped kind of get me back moving again. You know what I mean? I was still working, but I just had a really hard time the first probably 6 weeks because I just didn't know what was happening. After that, though, it was almost like a switch was turned on. And then I started recording and writing, and I released 3 singles just in the past 3 weeks on iTunes. Like, I'm really like just doing it now. Like, it's time.
Okay.
So I feel like it's been good. Now it's good, but before it was not.
Okay. All right. So you've been doing a lot of writing.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. So can you give us a little sneak peek of what you've been working on?
Oh, sure. Let me think. I can perform. I can do a poem for you.
Sure.
I actually will do the one that just came out on iTunes. I said, okay, it has no swear words, nothing. It's fine.
That's fine.
So it's called Backsliders.
Yeah.
Sunday mornings are our only chance to dance under the covers. Your slick skin against mine, the scent of our dreams dancing in the air. You touch me there where prose is born, where my heart beats. We speak the same language no one else knows. We stay in bed past noon. You become my lunch, my belly full of you. Your kiss still on my nose. I dream of more Sundays just like this. So that's Backsliders. So that's on iTunes. You can go on iTunes. iTunes, Apple Music came out last night, midnight.
Are you serious?
But it has music with it. So you gotta
hear the whole thing. Serious? This is
yeah, you gotta listen to it.
This is how you doing it? You bring it like that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, wait a minute. Okay, so let's talk about this here because so how do you just get your stuff on iTunes? How do you do that?
Let me tell you who helped me. And this is what's crazy. So my son, I have a son that's 27 years old. People don't believe that too. He's 27. He's a musician. And last year for Christmas, he got me distribution because I had not released music in 15 years. I did a CD 15 years ago called Mojo. I did an old school CD baby, hard CDs, like passed them out to DJ. And so he was like, Mom, I want you to start recording again. And so if there's a service that you can use that you upload it tonight and it's on iTunes at midnight. So really easy, really easy. I have a studio in my home, so I record right here at home. So I can have content live tonight if I want to.
Is it free? You have to pay.
Yeah, I think it's like $20 a year. It's not that much. I'll send you the link for it.
Please send me the link.
Because that could be something that you maybe could promote on your podcast as a sponsor or something, you know? So I'll send you the link so you can check it out.
Yeah, please. Thank you. I appreciate it. Wow.
Yeah.
I didn't even know anything about that.
Back in the day, it used to be like that. Even 3 years ago, it wasn't like that. But now there's a service that you pay them $20 a year and they add as many as you want to iTunes. So, and I think mine's going to expire in January. So I'm going to try to do 2 more singles before it expires. He said he'll renew it for me though. So it's fine.
Wow. Okay. So tell me what your writing process is like now.
Oh my goodness.
Right now. What is it like? I mean, do you get up in the morning and, you know, eat your breakfast and stuff like that? And then how is it? Or
comes.
The feeling hit you and you just
yes. It's almost, and I explained it earlier this week, like it was kind of like almost like a train that comes over me, where it feels like I have to stop and write it down. If I don't, it's going to pass me. I'm going to miss that. And I've done that before. I've missed it. And so I don't have I tell people like write every day. Cause I say that you write every day, you get your muscles. I don't write every day. Honestly, I might record every day though, but I don't usually write every day.
Yeah. I know what you mean by the passing thing. Because if you don't get it and,
yes.
you lose it, my God, you're just upset with yourself.
Yeah. And there's a book that I just finished reading. I forget what it was called. Something Brave. But she talked about that. It was about being creative. And she said that an idea is just energy. So if that idea is in my head and I don't do anything with it, my idea can jump from my head to your head. So that's why you see, like I watched this show the other night, Law and Order, that was the same storyline of a short film I'm working on. The exact same storyline, but that's what happens. And that's why people send scripts out and they say, they stole my idea. No, I mean, on OWN, what show was it? Greenleaf is very similar to Rhythm and Blue. It has had lots, you know what I mean? So even the pastor's name was Jacob and my pastor's name was Jacob. So it's, you know what I mean? So, but people have other ideas too.
Wow. All right, so I love writing, you know what I'm saying? And I've loved language and words since I was a kid. So I just want to get you just to talk about each of the books a little bit and tell us a little bit about the books that you wrote. Tell us a little bit about Gabby Gives Back.
Okay. So that's actually my most popular book. Gabby Gives Back is about a little girl named Gabby who goes to a like a soup kitchen shelter with her dad. He goes every weekend to volunteer, but she asks one day if she can go with him, and he lets her go. So she sees these people, you know, being fed, and, you know, she can't really volunteer because she's too young, but she can kind of stand off and watch. And then she sees a little girl come in that doesn't have a coat on. She has a hole in her dress, and she could tell that she's, you know, doesn't have a lot of money. And so she asked her dad, like, what can we do to help them? And so they go home, they go through their closets, and they get a box of coats, and they get a box of food, and they bring it back the next, actually, I think the same day they bring it back. Yeah. And so it's teaching children how to go and look at the things you already have that you're not using to give to someone else. So very basic, right? It's a perfect Thanksgiving Day book. But what's happening is that, you know, I'm doing one tomorrow. I do a lot of kind of story times online, and a lot of children are hearing this story and hearing this message of give your coat away. And that's what they're doing at school. So kids are coming home from school without their coats on because they read my book. So now I have to be more clear and say, ask your parents for a coat, not your current coat, because they're giving the coats, which is great, right? But yeah.
Wow.
But yeah, that's Gabby. Yeah.
Okay. Now, how do your stories usually come to you?
So Gabby, actually, my mom and I created her together like 10 years ago. And so we knew that we wanted her to be Black. We wanted her to be, to have a dress on like a little girl. We wanted her to be very curious and kind and very giving. And so that was kind of the three things for her. We did not want her to be like a cartoon character that like runs around. And, you know, most cartoon characters don't have parents. They're running around. We wanted her to have two parents. So it's to kind of have this this example of a Black family for Black children.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Excellent. All right. So talk about But Now I See.
That's the sequel to The Rhythm and Blue. So it picks up where The Rhythm and Blue leaves off. So people who see the movie will be able to read book two and know what happens after the movie. Like after the movie goes off, they'll know what happens. So that came out maybe 3 years after, but did not get made into a film. The film company did not pick it up. So it's just kind of hanging out there. Someone else can pick it up if they want it to. But yeah.
And so the movie hasn't come out yet, but Amazon has the rights?
No, Amazon has the movie. There's some sort of error that our producer's getting. And I go on there every day because I do this on purpose because I see some of the like really horrible movies that are on Amazon. I'm like, how is it that their stuff's up there and our stuff's not up there? But there's a reason, and there's a time for everything. And I feel like everything's going to happen all at one time. So it may not be till January, but it'll be out.
How long did it take to make the movie?
I would say start to finish about a year. Because I just did the 2 weeks. No. And they weren't either. It was like they would take a weekend, they would film in DC. They took a weekend, they film in Rhode Island, Connecticut, you know. But yeah.
None of it was filmed in Virginia?
No. That would have been cool though. Yeah. No, but where they shot it, it's like the opening, is it the opening scene? And the closing scene actually. Opening scene and closing scene is water, which, you know, I love water. And so it kind of looks like Virginia, but it's not. It's South Carolina.
Wow.
Right outside Charleston, actually.
This is impressive. I would love to have a book that I wrote made into a movie, but I haven't written any books like that. I only have one fiction book that I wrote.
Oh, well, then what are you going to do with it?
Well, I have it, but...
So what are you going to do with it?
What do you mean, what am I going to do with it? I mean, they came to you. They came to you and said they want to make their movie into a film.
I mean, yeah, but if you want it made into a movie, there are people that can make it into a movie. I didn't like it. Just the process of making a film is a lot. I mean, it's 12, 14 hour days. You're on set sometimes in a corner, just kind of watching, you know, but it's still cool to see it all come together.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right, so let's just tell me about, because I was curious about this title, But You Have Such a Pretty Face. Who are you talking about here?
Oh, me. Talk about me. So my whole life, people have always said to me, oh my God, you have such a pretty face. If you would just lose weight, you would be a knockout. Oh my gosh, you would be so beautiful.
Are you serious? Like,
oh my God.
Did people really say that when you
were born? To this day, people still say that, yeah.
Wow.
And I think that it's not malicious. It's just, they're just saying, they think I would look better if I was smaller. And so, so I wrote the book, and you would not believe the feedback I've gotten from women who have been told that their whole life. So like, it's just something people think that they're being kind, But I just want to tell people, you know, if someone is overweight, if someone is fat, if some whatever, like whatever you want to call it, it's fine. It's totally fine. Someone can be fat and pretty. Someone can be fat and sexy. So.
Okay, so the book is about you. Is it an autobiography?
It's poetry. It's poetry. It's my poetry. So it's poetry about being a mom, poetry about, you know, being married, poetry about, yeah, being in Tennessee. And so what surprised me about the book is I ended up doing like a little mini book tour at like assisted living facilities, which is like random, but older women loved this book. They love this book because it talks a lot about loss, talks a lot about relationships and motherhood. And so that's something we as women share common. So it doesn't matter where you're from or where you live, but if you're Southern, you're going to really like my books because I write a lot about the South.
Wow. Well, why did you decide to put it in poems? Why didn't you just write an autobiographical book without the poetry? Why did you make that decision?
Because it really was just a poetry collection. It really didn't tell a story. It wasn't like it was a storyline in the book. It's in sections. So there's a section on weight loss or just on weight. There's a section on being a mom. But it's not like an order, any sort of order. So it's really just a poetry collection, but it's about me. It's about me as a woman. Yeah. And I met, you know, my mom is, my mom is very ill. And so I'm working on something now with her, just trying to just document our process, right? Cause we've done so many books together. I probably have 200 of her paintings all around, and just honoring who she is as an artist and as a woman. And it's been hard though, but it's just trying to just keep track. So I'm taking pictures, I'm doing videos and trying to just keep track of who she is now so we can document that too. So that might be the next project, is maybe a little documentary on her life.
Okay, so what are your days like now? When you get up, are you always in a creative space? Like, are you just writing, and do you do any painting? Do you paint like
your mom? I draw. I doodle, but I don't paint. But I'm not even artsy. I am artsy, but I like to draw. I like to doodle. I like to, of course, write. I love to read too, and music. Music's my thing. But most days, I mean, I work at home. So most days I'm up very early. I usually leave my house to do prayer. So anytime you see water or anything, it's because I've left my home to pray. So days that I feel like I need a little bit of a kind of stepped up prayer, I leave home to do it. I go to work. I feel like God's created that space and that's where I go. But yeah.
Wow.
That's it.
Wow. Okay. All right. So why did you agree to be on the show? Because I think I reached out to you on Instagram. Is that right?
You did? Yep.
Okay. So because I saw some of your stuff. I saw some of your content and I said, well, it would be great to have her on the program. So why did you agree to come on the show?
Well, I checked you out to make sure you weren't a creep, and you're not. So that was the first thing, because I do get a lot of these.
Yeah,
and I don't usually check inboxes either, to be honest. Like, especially this last song I just released, my inboxes, I just can't do it right now. So when people request me, usually I'll just say, shoot me an email. But then I think I took some time getting back to you, but then I got back to you. But here we are. So it all worked out. But I think, yeah, I checked you out. It sounded cool. I checked out the podcast online. And I'm like, this seems cool.
Yeah. I just like to have people on who are interesting and thoughtful, you know, and mm-hmm. who can give me a different perspective on things. All right, so just tell me a little bit about why did you start writing? Everybody has a story. Why did you start?
Yeah, it's an outlet for me. You know, I grew up in a house with a painter. My mom's a painter and artist. My dad is a musician. He's also a funeral home director and a preacher. But I grew up in a home that just had a lot of stuff happening all the time, artistic stuff. And I came from a family that whatever I want to do, I could do. If I want to be a ballerina, cheerleader, bass clarinet, whatever, I could do it. And if I want to do it for 1 hour, that was fine. If I want to do it for a year, that was fine. Like, I could do whatever I want. And so I think a lot of parents now, they try to teach their kids discipline, I think, by making them stick out, you know, projects that they've started or events that they've started. But I think if the kids are not enjoying it, let them try something else. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what made me develop I have a program called Arts in the City where when we're in person, it's a 5-week program where kids can try everything from rapping to poetry, dance, painting. So they try everything. At the end of that, we have an exhibit where we show everything that they learned. And then at the end of that, they usually have found something that really sparked, you know, it's kind of sparked a flame in them, right? And so I'm hoping that I'll be able to get that experience the same, because that's what I had as a child. If one day I wanted to paint, I could paint. If I wanted to draw the next day, I could do that. So I want to do the same for kids because I think kids aren't given that option now, especially now with COVID.
Right. All right. So I got to ask you about the election, you know.
Oh, God.
Yeah. Got to ask you about the election. Okay. So what were your thoughts about the election, about the campaign? And what are your thoughts about the results of the election?
You know, I don't know. I think I'm glad it's over. I'll say that. I know the next day after it was supposedly kind of over, I felt this lightness in my chest. Like I just felt like I had been carrying this heaviness around. I didn't even know I was carrying around. But what's good about this campaign, what was probably good about it was that it forced conversations that have never happened before in spaces I've been in for a long time. And so I've been in spaces where people have admitted that they're afraid of big Black men, and white women have said this. And then I can step in and say, well, my husband is a larger Black man. So I took offense to that, right? But by the end of this workshop, it took about 7 weeks, we were able to have an understanding, me and this woman, of why she felt that way. And, you know, but that wouldn't have happened if the election hadn't happened. So I think it brought a lot of stuff to the surface that people weren't ready to talk about, but had to talk about. And it also kind of, because it happened during COVID, people were home, people were aware of just how people are being mistreated all over the place.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right, so wait a minute. So take me, I don't want you to give me any particulars about the conversation, but what, you know, can you give me a little bit of her reasoning?
Yeah, she didn't even know why. She didn't even know why. So this was just a group of people that got together, read a book together, and talked about the book together every week. So book club on Zoom. And so they asked, the first week was, is there a bias that you have that you weren't aware of until this week? And she said, you know, I noticed that when I'm out, if there's a larger Black man around me, I notice I'm a little more afraid than if it's just a regular man, right, in quotes. And I asked her, I said, why is that? She said, I don't know. And I said, well, I'm married to a big Black man. So like, if he was in a space with you, would you be afraid of him? And she said, maybe. But my husband is the kindest, gentlest man. He is so gentle. And so for someone to be afraid of him just by the way that he looks, that terrifies me. But that's how our men are getting killed every day, is people see him as a threat and he's not.
Wow.
So that fired me up a little bit, to be honest, you know, but then by the end of it, 7 weeks, we were able to talk about it. She still doesn't know why, but she at least now is aware of it. So.
All right. So when you saw this man with this police had his knee on this man's neck, when you saw that, how did it affect you?
Well, that was around the time I was telling you that I had 6-7 weeks of that George Floyd. That was like back in March, right?
Yeah.
Wasn't that right? That all happened in March.
Yeah.
Brianna, like all that happened. And so I was still showing up to work every day on Zoom, right? Like I am right now. Right? Hair done, makeup done. Still, even though they're murdering Black women and leaving them in their bedrooms, I'm still here, right? And so I think that was what I was struggling with, was seeing him being murdered over and over and over and over. And at one point I had to turn the TV off. I was like, I'm not watching it anymore. Why? Why? Like, that's like seeing my husband or my son being murdered. I would never do that. I would never watch that.
Wow.
So for me, because I mean, I'm super sensitive though, which you probably know that I'm emotional. I feel everything. And so, yeah, I couldn't be around it.
All right, when you and your husband had to talk, when you had to talk with him, because he's a big Black man, you know what I'm saying? What did you say to him?
I just told him just to be aware. He is anyway, but I said, just be aware of your surroundings. Because I also worry about other people trying to hurt him, right? Because I've heard from men, from larger men, that sometimes people challenge you because you are a larger man. You don't have to even do nothing. You could be out having a good time and somebody just charge you. So I think just trying to get him to just make sure he always stays calm, even if he feels like he wants to get upset, because he does have a temper. Of course he does. And so I try to just be that kind of calming, you know, so that if I feel like he's going to get like that, because he's not like that normally. But I don't want him to get to go there, because he's not going to be given the same grace I would be given. If I go somewhere and show out, like, I'm not going to be treated the way he would be treated. And that's the reality.
Wow.
Yep.
Wow. All right. So how old is your son?
He's 27. And my son wrote a song about the police. So that's how he dealt with it. He has a song called 911. And it's a song for Black, for young Black men to just comply. If you get pulled over, just sit quietly, give them, you know, but it's kind of, I mean, I haven't shared it because it's not against the cops, but it's basically saying the cops don't care about you. So take care of yourself. You know what I mean? Like, take care of yourself. It's not about them, it's about you. Get home to your family. And so, it's a song that taught a lot of kids about how to just comply, right? There's gonna be times where you're gonna comply and they're gonna still kill you, but.
We are living in a very dangerous time. How do you think the president-elect Joe Biden and the vice president Kamala Harris are going to deal with these social issues?
I honestly think it'll be better than it was. I think we didn't have much of a choice this go round. I was not excited when it was time to vote. But I think that we have to kind of take the hammer dealt with. I think that they both have experience. Kamala, to be honest, I had my ideas about her without really knowing about her. I just kind of had heard some things and read some things about her. But did more research, and I'm fine with, I think she's going to do fine. So I'm excited. I mean, I'll support them.
Okay. Thanks. Yeah.
That's my politically correct answer.
Okay. All right. Now I got to ask you for some tips. I got to ask you for some tips about some things. Okay. So I have this book called The G Experiment.
Okay.
Right. Okay. So how can I get my book made into a movie?
Well, who would want to hear the story? Who's your audience? That's the first question. Mm-hmm. And then what other movies are out like that, right? So for me, The Rhythm and Blue, to me, it's kind of being billed as a Christian, kind of urban Christian feel-good film, right? So I think about all these movies you see on Hallmark and like BET Plus and like where it's like people coming home for the, you know what I mean?
Right.
So what's your book about? What's it about?
Yeah, it's about a guy called Greg Anderson from Brooklyn, New York. His mother left when he was six. And okay. His father is a ex-Marine. And he raised him, and he got into trouble when he was young, hanging out in the corner with his friends, and he did 10 years in prison. Geez. So when he got out, he was determined to change his life. He didn't hang around those guys anymore. And he met this woman named Sarah in the library.
Okay.
He started reading a lot when he was in jail, you know, and educated himself. So he missed his books. He went to the library and he met this woman named Sarah. So his father, right, his father's grandfather was a Muslim, and his grandmother was a Christian. But when they met, they didn't date. The grandfather and the grandmother got to know each other through the family.
Okay.
They meet at family gatherings and talk to one another and stuff like that. And that's how they got to know about each other. And then they got married. And they started dating after they got married. So because his grandfather did that, G wanted to do it. That's his thing. G wanted to do that with Sarah. So when he talked to her in the library, he told her about this experiment that he wanted to take with her, right? Mm-hmm. And she agreed to it.
Wow.
So she went home and told her father that she, you know, that she met this guy named Greg and he wanted to do this right like that. And he wants to marry me, but he doesn't want to date. And that's how the story, that's how it is, like that.
Is this about you?
No, it's not.
It's not even based loosely on you? No? You weren't
why you think
your dad on an ex-Marine?
Why do you think it's about me?
Because, I mean, not all of the story, but I think maybe your dad might have been an ex-Marine.
My father was in the military. Are you psychoanalyzing me on that?
Yeah. Oh yeah, I'm like, oh, this is about him. Loosely. I'm not saying you've been in jail. I'm just saying, and if you have, that's fine. But you know, it is what it is.
Yeah, well,
if
it
you're
has
here now, that's what matters to me is that you're here now.
Yeah, right? it has some things about me in it.
But it's interesting though. It's very interesting. And that make a great movie.
Okay, so how would I go about trying to get something like that done?
Are you part of any screenwriting groups?
No.
So on Facebook, they have one. It's called Black Screenwriters. I'll send you a link to that too. I'm part of that. And there's always people on there saying, I'm looking for a film to produce, like legit people. Or I'm looking for someone to help me write a screenplay, or I'm looking for someone to help me, you know, so just join that and put it up. Say, look, I'm interested in someone maybe optioning my book for a film. Is anyone interested? And then they might ask you to just tell them about it. Wow. And then also take advantage of all, I've been doing this too. Sundance has free writing workshops, like free, like you sign up online and you can join them any day and just write with other people. But I do it because there's a 30-minute time period where they bring you into a room and there's Sundance execs in the room. And you can share, like, this is what I'm working on. So right now I'm working on a musical. And so I was able to share my musical with these Sundance people. And they were like, think about it as a film. They're like, think about what's on right now on Netflix, that Jingle Jangle, which is such a cute movie if you haven't watched it yet. But they're like, that is a musical that was optioned and put on TV. So that's what I'm gonna do. Just take my musical and make it into a movie, a TV movie.
Wow. I am so glad that you came on.
Thank you for inviting me.
Yeah, it was such a joy. Okay, do you have any parting thoughts for the audience?
Yes. So if they can just go on iTunes, Amazon Music, if they type in my name, Crystal Center Brown Center with an S, they can find all my music. I have a story time I'm planning that is going to be on Christmas Eve. It's going to be a diverse online story time where we're going to have different authors from all over the world, really, sharing their books for an hour on Christmas Eve. And so I'll be putting a link up for that. But yeah.
I appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, it was such a joy. I had so much fun. Thank you for coming on.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. That was Mrs. Crystal Center Brown. She is an author and she is a writer and she does music and like this, and she is also a justice of the peace. I appreciate her coming on and giving me all of this insight and these tidbits about writing, because I love words and language. Anybody who listens to me or reads any of my content knows that. I love these things. I really appreciate her coming on. And it was such a joy. It's always a joy to just talk with people who are creative and inspiring and trying to, you know, uplift people. And like this, it is such a joy all the time. Anyone who would like to get in touch with me, you can get in touch with me on Facebook, Instagram, and Pinterest at Lewis Morris Coaching. That's at LouisMorris Coaching. You can also go to the website and check out the Revitalized Relationship Package, the coaching package, and also the Spiritual Growth Package. We also have the two free eBooks available on the website at LouisMorrisCoaching.com. That's LouisMorris.com. Also, we have the relationship survey available. You can go to the link in my bio and go to my link tree, and you can find the relationship survey and other things that we have available, the website, the free eBooks, and all of that on Facebook and on Instagram. Anyone who would like to send me a message, I have a Let's Talk section on the back of the website. You can send me a message there, or you can DM me on Instagram or on Facebook. And I love to hear from you guys. It is always a pleasure indeed. We are getting the results of the survey together so that we can put the packages together to better provide better service to the coaching clients and to the Heart Matters community at large, so that we can offer more value to you. And we're looking forward to that. I thank you guys for all of your support. It is really such a joy and a pleasure to do this job. Anyone who would like to get any of the books, Ramble, The G Experiment, or A Treatise on Cultivating Manhood, you can go to the link tree and find them as well. Or you can just go to Amazon.com and type in Lewis Morris and type in the title of the book that you would like to get, and you can get it there. Also, the Heart Matters stores are up and running. You can also find them in the link tree. They are available, the Heart Matters store, the Heart Matters stores, and the Heart Matters brand. We have so much content coming up, and we are so excited about it. The podcast is taking off. The Heart Matters community is growing so rapidly, and I appreciate you guys' support and listening and sharing and liking of the podcast. And please, guys, continue to do that. We're going to be reading from a treatise on cultivating manhood at least once a week. Of course, we won't do anything next week until Friday, until maybe Friday or Saturday, the day after Thanksgiving. We'll do a reading then, and we'll share it sometime during the weekend. But we're going to start reading from the book until it's completed. It's a small treatise. It's not large. We will read a section each time we come on until we complete the work. And I hope you guys enjoy that. And I hope you enjoy the podcast and the blog. If you want any daily inspiration, any wisdom, check out the blog post, check out the podcast or anything like that, then you can go to the links in my bio on Instagram and Facebook and check out any of those things. I thank you guys for your support and for listening, and I will speak to you again soon. Thanks for listening to another episode of the Heart Matters podcast. For relationship, spiritual, coaching, and resources, go to the Heart Matters brand link tree, which is linktr.ee/louismorris. That's linktr.ee/louismorris. And we will see you again soon.